Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Greg Heller-Labelle, who is one of the founders of Colony Meadery in Allentown. Greg, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a simple question. What is mead and how is it made?
Mead is just alcohol made from honey. So cider's made from apples, beer's made from grains, wine's made from grapes or fruit, mead's made from honey. It's made in a process that's pretty similar to wine or cider. The fermentation controls are a little more intense. It takes a little bit longer, but it's basically the same process.
But the whole idea is turning sugar into just enough alcohol to impart a certain feeling.
Absolutely. As the old jokes go, it's humans can't make alcohol, only yeast do. So we start with a bunch of sugar and water, in our case honey, add yeast. The yeast turn it into alcohol. We take very good care of them while they do that, and then we stop them when we're ready for it to have the right kind of balance.
Now, does the history of mead kind of go back to like the history of wine and the history of beer, where they almost developed at the same time, where people were experimenting with different beverages?
So mead and cider and wine predate human history. You don't need humans to make these. The first time a beehive ever got flooded by rainwater, we had naturally occurring mead. First time an apple ever fell in a tree stump with rainwater, we had naturally occurring hard cider. Beer's a little later. The aliens had to teach us how to make that. You need humans. But mead, wine, cider, these occur in nature. Animals found it, humans found it, and then is liked it pretty much instantly, even though obviously by today's standards that would have been pretty gross. Mm-hmm. But it was safer than water. You know, fermentation killed a lot of the things that could kill you. Water could kill you for a lot of human history. And so humans found mead, and they made it really ever since then. Obviously since way, way before we had recorded history.
And how did you personally get started making mead?
So I got started in college. I'd started homebrewing with my roommate, and like many, many, many homebrewers, you know, we made a batch of beer or two and then immediately started saying, well, what else can we ferment? And so, you know, like a lot of homebrewers, you start with wine, you make a cider, let's make a mead. We, you know, read Beowulf and enjoyed it. and so through no virtue of my own, I was a pretty middling homebrewer. We made a mead that came out great. And I always wondered why this wasn't really on the market more, and kind of always carried a torch for it. And so that would kind of stay in my mind until I met my now business partner, Mike, and we decided to open the meadery.
And if I remember, you started brewing that first batch of mead back in 2004, but it took you almost 10 years to open up the meadery, right?
Yeah, I mean, my first batch of mead is in 2004 in Pittsburgh, in a house in Squirrel Hill with my college roommate. And then, you know, I kind of homebrew on and off over the next 10 years. I moved from Pittsburgh back to Lehigh Valley, back to Reading, and then back to Lehigh Valley, and that's where, you know, on my third tour of duty in the Lehigh Valley is where I met my now business partner, Mike, at a beer tasting. And he brought a bottle of his homemade mead, which was a mojito flavored mead that we now call Momito. and it had just won a gold medal. And I tried it. And I said, this is the best mead I've ever had. Have you ever thought about doing this professionally?
And that was the genesis of Colony Meadery.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know each other. So it was probably a weird thing to say to a stranger. But you know, over the next few months we would hang out and I would kind of say like, this was just so good. I think this needs to be on shelves. And we talked about, you know, if you don't want to open it, would you be interested in opening a meadery? No, I wouldn't. What if I invested? Would you be interested in that? No, not really. Okay. Why not? Well, I don't really want to do any of the business stuff. Well, I got an MBA at Lehigh. Supposedly they taught me how to do that. What if I put a business plan together? Would you take a look at that? Yeah, sure, why not? You know, at which point I called a friend of mine from business school who had just taken over an incubator in South Allentown. And I said, hey, I met this guy. He makes this great product. I want to open a meadery. And my friend Anthony Durante said, get out of my office. I have had mead and it is gross and you will never ever run a business doing that here. And I said, no, you need to meet this guy and try this stuff. Brought Mike in, poured Anthony the samples, and he said, oh, yeah, you could sell that. That would work. We shook hands and went into business.
Well, mead isn't just one flavor. I mean, there are a whole variety of flavors that you're able to get from that process.
Yeah, from a flavoring perspective, I actually think it's the most versatile craft beverage. The sheer breadth of what you can do with mead, because the base ingredient of honey allows you so many building blocks, and you can really get meads very, very low in alcohol, and you can get them very, very high in alcohol. And you can get them very low in sweetness and very high in sweetness, and the base honey you use can either can bring out or dampen the flavors that you put on top of it in a way that the other craft beverages don't really allow you to do. And so we've got everything from, you know, a 5% Arnold Palmer that doesn't even taste like you're drinking anything, that comes in a can, and up to, you know, we've gone as high as 18% raspberry chipotle. You can barrel age. You can do all of these things. It's really very versatile.
Is it more of a blank canvas because it's just the water and honey, the sweetness, as opposed to, you know, malt and beer will impart a certain flavor naturally. And also the grapes with wine also come with a natural inherent flavor to them where you might not get that with the mead.
So in wine and cider, you've got really, you're trying to highlight your base fermentable. Apples, grapes, that's what you want to do. That's why, you know, a lot of wines that we don't see a lot of adjunct wines, you know, they're trying to highlight the flavor of the Chambrisson, the Chardonnay, the Merlot, whatever. Same thing with apple cider. You're trying to highlight the apple blend or the apples you use. In craft beer and mead, to some extent, you're really building a flavor profile. In craft beer, you're using different malts and hops and schedules and things like that, and adjuncts. In mead, you're using the type of honey, the amount of honey, how much of it you ferment, and then the flavors that you're putting on top of that, which can be fruit, spices, really a lot of different things, and how all those things work in balance.
And what are some of the favorite flavors at the meadery, I guess, for people coming in? We'll ask about your preferences in a second.
So, our best seller is our traditional mead, which is called Straight No Chaser, which I'm now told is also the name of a band. And it's a traditional mead means we don't add any flavors. It is just orange blossom honey, which is our base honey for most of our meads. It means the bees pollinated an orange grove. So you get that nice, bright citrus backbone. It's about 13%, same strength as a normal table wine. That's our best seller. It's a great entry point into mead. It's really become, sort of our flagship. Then we've got what we call our session meads, which are those lighter carbonated meads. I talked about our Arnold Palmer one called T-Tex. That sells very, very well.
So lemonade iced tea kind of
thing? Yeah, yeah. Or a Wawa half and half in these parts, if you prefer that. So you've got, you know, a real range there, with different sort of flavors. Mojito, that mojito one we have, still sells very, very well. And then we have a cranberry orange called Wu-Tang Cran. That does very well, particularly.
I can't believe
in the
fall. I just heard that.
Yeah. Careful patrons will note that we have a lot of music references in our mead names, like a lot. We're big music people, and we like giving little homages.
Now, have there been any memorable misses where you thought, hey, let's try these kind of flavors together, and then batch is done, you're thinking, maybe not so much?
Absolutely. So we've learned that if we think we have a good idea and it's weird, we make a test batch. We've famously tried many versions of a tomato mead and try to make kind of like a Bloody Mary flavor. We have yet to really nail that in a way that made any of us not want to dump the thing down the drain. And then there are some that we honestly thought were going to work, and we did make a full batch. Early on, we made a raspberry chocolate that was 16 or 17% alcohol. And we really thought that was going to fly. And with the alcohol combined with the chocolate and the fruit, it really didn't come together in the way that we wanted. We've never made it again, and we probably never will. It just wasn't, you know. So there definitely sometimes you'll do it and you'll be pretty confident, you know, what wouldn't work about this? And early on, you don't really have the time to experiment and to build a pilot system. Now we've got a pretty good way of working through ideas before we release them to the public.
Now, you mentioned your Allentown location there in the is it the Enterprise Center?
Mm-hmm.
What can one expect if you go in there for a tasting or a tour? What's the experience like?
So our tours, which are on Friday evenings and Saturdays, you'll go through the process, the history of mead, history of us, what we do to make it. You'll get to try five different meads along the tour. Tours usually go about 30 to 45 minutes. For a while, I think we were the number one thing to do in Allentown on TripAdvisor. You know, we really take pride in delivering a good experience. If you're just coming in for a tasting, which you can do without a reservation or an appointment when we're open, we've got anywhere from 20 to 30 varieties at any given time. You can try kind of five of our best sellers for $8. You can pick any five you want for another dollar. We've got usually about 8 meads on draft you can try. There's just a lot of different ways to experience it. Obviously, bottles to go. So we try to provide at least something for everybody.
And you're there in the center with County Seat and Hijinks. I imagine that'd be a benefit, that the growth in craft beer and craft distilleries has maybe brought people in there, and people who are there are naturally curious to find different flavors.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly big believers in clustering. That's something that we get out of the craft beer world, where we've really seen that work. When breweries cluster, people go and go to all of them. So when we moved into the Bridgeworks Enterprise Center, you know, we then really stepped up our recruiting of Hijinks. And when Anthony from County Seat reached out to us, we were very excited about them moving in, because it really is. It's a one-stop place. You know, you can go in with a group of people. You've got craft beer, you've got mead, you've got spirits, all, 20 feet from each other. So people get to try a real range of stuff. Obviously, it cuts down on driving. It's one short Uber ride from almost anywhere. And it really provides a nice kind of thing. In addition to the other fun stuff, like the barrels that just kind of get traded back and forth between the three of us, allow us to do a lot of fun.
So meaning that there might be something aged in a barrel at Hijinks, and then you'll use that barrel for something else.
Yeah, we've got right now a barrel-aged mead that was aged in a wee heavy Scotch ale barrel from Hijinks. And, we've now had barrels go on to their fourth and fifth iteration, from the distillery to us to Hijinks and back and all over the place.
That's some good synergy.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I like it. Tell us about your new location opening in the south side of Bethlehem.
So it's going to be on 3rd Street, 211 East 3rd for Southside denizens. It's the old Mario's Dry Cleaners, right next to Patty's Petals. So, if you can throw a rock over the Seatown Market, you could hit Bond Brewing Company. We're still in construction, hope to be open pretty soon. It's going to be a tasting room. We're going to have light fare. We're really going to be able to do... showcase a bunch of local stuff. We'll have, some PA beers, do a nice cocktail list. We're really excited about being a part of the South Side. I've been spending time on the South Side since I was a kid, and I really love the neighborhood. We think it's a great fit for us. We're really, really excited to be open.
And you went to Lehigh, so you're kind of giving back to that South Side community.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Lehigh and for my MBA, and really just have kind of been, when I was a kid, I would help out building some of those pocket parks that exist, Pulaski Park, Yabsco Park. It actually turned out that Mario from the Dry Cleaner and I had probably worked on Yabsco Park together.
And now you're giving them a new destination.
So yeah, we're really excited. It's a great area.
Excellent. Greg, thanks for joining us here at WDIY in the Inside Dish.
Thank you so much, Mike.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is the Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
Amazing Grace depicts a concert by Aretha Franklin, filmed in 1972 in a Los Angeles church during the recording of a live gospel music album of the same title. Though billed as a documentary, there is very little commentary and no interviews with Aretha Franklin nor those associated with the project. Basically, Amazing Grace is a concert film, or a gospel version, if you will, of concert films from that era, notably Woodstock and Gimme Shelter, both released in 1970. Aretha Franklin was at the height of her popularity. The albums Lady Soul and Aretha Now, both released in 1968, had some of her most popular hit singles, including Chain of Fools and Think. Aretha Franklin apparently wanted to get back to her gospel singing and recording roots. Prior to her crossover success, Amazing Grace became the biggest-selling gospel album ever. Fans of Aretha Franklin, known as the Queen of Soul, will be fascinated by the gospel side of Aretha Franklin. She sings lead on the 11 or so songs in the film, standing stationary at a microphone behind a podium and briefly singing and playing at the Steinway. Aretha Franklin is backed by the Southern California Community Choir and the Reverend James Cleveland on piano, as well as a great group of recording studio session musicians. The film's brief commentary is by the Reverend James Cleveland in his introduction to Aretha Franklin and in a brief speech at the podium by her father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin. Amazing Grace was filmed on two nights at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Los Angeles. Seen briefly in the film is the film's director, Sidney Pollack, and two very out-of-place-looking white blokes malingering uncomfortably at the entrance arches of the church, none other than the Prince of Darkness himself, Mick Jagger, and his cohort, Rolling Stones drummer Charlie Watts. What is extraordinary about Amazing Grace is its glimpse into Aretha Franklin's sensitive piano playing, nuanced and powerful